lovers, and welcome to the Liberty Mike podcast, broadcasting from an undisclosed location in the heart of Dixie. I am Michael, and I'm here with Liberty Larry.
How's it going?
Doing okay. Happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
Thanks. I mean, it's not actually Thanksgiving anymore, but I hope you had a happy Thanksgiving.
Yes.
That's the way I should phrase that.
And happy Black Friday.
Oh, yeah.
I see you're celebrating with your black shirt.
Oh, what a coincidence. You too.
Yeah, right. This is all I wear, so. Yeah. But, yeah, happy Black. We can still say Black Friday, right? That's not a...
That's a good question. I don't know what the alternative is.
I don't know either, so, yeah. I guess we'll stick with that till they come up with something else. Till the powers that be tell us to call it something new.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I don't know. This one's a positive one, though, right? So it's okay?
Maybe. I don't know.
Well, speaking of black.
Yeah.
May as well jump right in there.
Let's just dive on in, right?
Yeah. We got some stuff to talk about. And race is a huge part of all of it, even though race isn't really a huge part of any of it.
Yeah.
So first, of course, would be the Rittenhouse trial.
Yeah.
And I'm just amazed at this. And like one of those things is that I think that people that are upset about this can't have paid any attention to what happened.
Well, and that's been my experience. So especially like I dwell kind of in the comments section of the Facebook and some of these places.
God, what a terrible place to be.
It's a horrible place. But I like to get an idea of what people are thinking and saying and, mm-hmm. you know, and it's interesting to me. I just find it interesting. And, but you can only look at it for so long because some of that stuff will just make you physically ill.
Yeah.
But I do think you make a good point that there's a ton of people out there who didn't watch the trial mm-hmm. or anything. And I get that people are busy, but just trust them what the media said. And dude, like they're completely misinformed.
Yeah.
And
well, like, this is what the media says. The media says that white supremacist Kyle Rittenhouse crossed state lines with an AR-15 to kill black people at the Black Lives Matter protests. And the Black Lives Matter protests were happening over the police's murder of the unarmed black man, Jacob Blake. And while Rittenhouse was over there, he killed two, injuring a third, and he was freed because of a racist judge and a legal system that favors whites.
I'm telling you right now, if any of that was true, this would be a completely different story. Like mm-hmm. if he had went over there with the intent, with the gun he had mm-hmm. to kill a bunch of people, he would have killed a bunch of people.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, for one, like, I mean, the fact that he only shot two people and like wounded one, mm-hmm. When he was being attacked, it like says something, like, or should to any like casual observer, yeah. like anybody who hasn't even really kept up, mm-hmm. like that should be pretty clear.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, okay. So like every single part of that, you're right, is wrong.
Yeah.
Except that it was an AR-15.
Yeah. Yeah.
He killed two and injured a third. Yeah. Although the media cleverly, after talking about how he went across state lines to kill black people and he killed two and injured a third, fails to mention that none of the people that were shot were black.
Were black. Yeah, exactly. Like he did a really bad job, right?
Yeah. I mean, but they lead you to believe it
in
the way they present it.
Yep.
Even though that's not the case. The white supremacist thing. There's no evidence anywhere.
No, in fact,
that he.
I don't know if you've kept up or heard because I haven't listened to the interview, but mm-hmm. He did. Kyle did an interview with that Tucker Carlson.
Mm-hmm. I haven't listened to any of it.
I haven't really listened, but I've seen some snippets, dude. Rittenhouse seems like he's a pretty progressive guy.
Yeah. Well, he's from a multiracial family, as I understand it.
Yeah.
Too, so
like, he had a lot of interesting things to say. I'm going to go mm-hmm. and listen to it at some point. I wish I had before this podcast so I could kind of speak to more of it.
Yeah.
But, like, he's the guy ain't in by any means a racist. In fact, one of the quotes I saw, he said something about, if a black guy had been accused of the same type thing and had the same type of district attorney mm-hmm. that he had, mm-hmm. that they'd probably be in jail. That he said something about being lucky to have the resources to fight a district attorney that was going after somebody so hard.
Wow. I'm not sure that that's true. If the facts had been the same in the case,
well, they wouldn't have. Well, the point is though, they wouldn't have went after him so hard if the facts had been different in the case. But mm-hmm. the point he was getting at is an aggressive district attorney mm-hmm. can screw you, well, and that was that
I think
was,
he did.
Well, I think he did, but but that was the point. Yeah, but I mean, he still ended up getting off in the end.
Mm-hmm. There was no case. It's a case that shouldn't have even been brought.
Yeah.
In fact, I would say the opposite. I would think that if it had been a black man instead of Kyle Rittenhouse that had been in that position, they wouldn't have brought a case at all.
Well, no.
Because it would have been such a clear-cut case of self-defense that they wouldn't have bothered trying to try it. They were trying to try it because it was a political case, because it was a white guy at a Black Lives Matter protest.
I wholeheartedly agree with that.
There was a bunch of political pressure on the district attorney to try the case, and that's the only reason he did so.
Yeah.
And it was stupid of him to do so anyway.
Yeah.
But I guess he couldn't not.
Yeah. In this,
it's not going to help his career either way, so
yeah,
I think
right.
he probably should have just left it alone.
Yeah.
But, you know.
No, agreed on all. I agree with all of that, but what I think more what he's getting at is there are district attorneys that just go after people mm-hmm. for whatever reason, for whatever they plan to gain from it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen it here locally where mm-hmm. the district attorney goes after somebody over something that's clear that they're clearly innocent of and just tries to force the case. And we were lucky in this circumstance, too, that we had a more sympathetic judge that was willing to at least make the case a fair case.
Yeah.
You know, and not let in a bunch of stuff that didn't need to be let in.
Yeah.
Because that's not always the case. Normally, especially like locally around here, mm-hmm. man, like you're dealing with attorneys and judges and all of these people and DAs that are all kind of working together for whatever goals they're working towards, you know?
Yeah.
People get railroaded all the time.
Oh, no, that's absolutely true. I don't think that is generally true when there's so much evidence as there was in this case, all these videos and so
agreed.
Forth.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Which is important in the other case that we're going to talk about tonight, too. But, you know, the cross state lines with an AR-15. First off, that's not true. He didn't cross the lines with the rifle. The rifle came from the side that he ended on.
Exactly.
But the cross state lines, I guess it makes it sound worse. Yeah. But it's entirely meaningless.
Well, on top of it being meaningless, the reason they keep saying that is because it gives the impression that the guy traveled like across the country to do this.
Yeah,
it's supposed
to speak to some kind of intent.
Yeah, exactly. But the truth is it's no different than like when you live on the border, like we do with Florida, you're over there all the time.
Yeah. Well, he worked there and his father lives there.
Exactly.
Like, so it's not like it was real unusual. Besides the fact that, you know, I think it doesn't make any difference whether I drive from here to Pensacola or here to Huntsville.
Yeah.
Now, if I drive from here to Huntsville to do something, I probably had a greater intent to do something there because that's like a 6-hour drive.
Yeah.
If I drive from here to Pensacola, it's like a 40-minute drive, even though I cross state lines.
Exactly.
And besides that, the whole point of the United States of America is that there's not supposed. It doesn't matter. Like the state lines aren't relevant to your ability to travel, or they're not supposed to be. That's changed a lot in the last 2 years. But
yeah.
Anyway, the idea is that you can cross back and forth across state lines, and they're just lines on a map here.
Yeah.
So it's an irrelevant piece of information, but it's presented to suggest that there's something deeper going on or that it's a greater crime because he crossed state lines and none of that's true. He didn't go there to kill black people. He went there to protect property, which I think that's like this weird kind of idealistic thing.
It's,
like when I jumped in the car after 9/11 to drive to New York and got talked out of that. But what good was I going to, I'd been an EMT. I guess I could have been some good there, but everybody was doing it. So, I just gotten in the way in the end.
Yeah.
But I was younger.
Yeah.
Sorry. I was in my
20s. You thought you had something to offer.
Yeah.
Because that's what, in this case with Rittenhouse, that's the whole reason he was there, mm-hmm. is he thought he had something to offer. I mean, he went over there to put out fires and perform EMT stuff where needed.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's, you know, and it was happening right in his backyard. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even like he had to go far to do it.
Yeah. You know? It was like a 20-minute drive for him, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like crossing the bay.
Yeah.
The BLM protest, so yeah, then the description of that, over the police murder of an unarmed black man. This is Jacob Blake. They usually say shot in the back by police, unarmed black man shot in the back by police.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so the reason that the police were there is because they'd been called about a domestic disturbance.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah, something
this,
like that.
I'm trying to remember back to this particular incident, mm-hmm. but I do remember it. And I'm pretty sure because they had called the police over. Yeah.
Yeah. And he admitted on primetime television with the guy that used to be a football player that's now a news guy, Strahan.
Oh, Strahan. Yeah.
Yeah. He told him that he was going for a knife.
Yeah.
Like, in an interview. Like, yeah. So, you know, and the reason they shot him is because they were telling him
he's the one
that wasn't cooperating and he was entering his car.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's the one that was trying to get in to the car whenever he mm-hmm. was being told directly not to.
Yeah.
And not, he just, he was completely, yeah, I remember.
Yeah,
that.
And he was going for a weapon, which he admitted.
Yeah. Well, like, what do you expect?
And now, I don't put a whole lot of stock into this anyway because, it's police involved. So, now, if you want to talk about a justice system that doesn't work the same way for somebody.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, all of the police officers involved were exonerated from this. They said it was a justified shooting. Yeah. And, you know, so the way that's being presented is not accurate either.
Yeah.
Of course, it wasn't at the time, which is, I don't know. I think it could have led to some protests that wouldn't have been protests if the information had been presented accurately to begin with.
Yeah.
Then he's freed because of a racist judge and a legal system that only works for whites. Well, that's just,
yeah.
I mean, that's just fantasy.
Yeah.
Crazy. I mean, I don't even know. I don't know where to start to argue against that because there's just no evidence whatsoever.
Yeah, to support any of it.
Yeah. Now, I think that they came to the right conclusion in this case because the only question that really matters. Now, the other thing is that you can go back. Like, a lot of people have been talking about, you know, the criminal backgrounds of these people that were shot.
Yeah.
I don't know how much of that was allowed into the case. You watched more of the case.
I don't think they let much of that in at all.
Well, and I don't think that they should.
No, I agree.
I don't think it's relevant in this case. But
I didn't see where it came up. And like I said, I didn't watch the whole thing, but I never saw where any of that was brought up.
Yeah. I mean, but they talk about Rittenhouse's background a little bit. I don't think that was in the case either. But we are not a courtroom, and so we can talk about this a little bit.
And they did talk about Rittenhouse's background a fair amount, but mm-hmm. mainly because that was why he was the background stuff as far as why he was there.
Yeah.
It came up a good bit in the case.
Well, I mean, some history of violence that he punched some girl that was in a fight with his sister.
Oh, I don't think none of that was let in.
Yeah.
Just talking about like his work as a volunteer firefighter and like that type of stuff, like his EMT training, like that type of stuff was in the case. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but one of these guys that he shot was a serial pedophile,
mm-hmm.
Child rapist.
Yeah.
These guys don't have great backgrounds. And I don't think that it's relevant to the case because there's only one thing really relevant to the case. But I do think it's relevant as we're talking about this in retrospect.
The type of people who were out there.
Yeah. And it speaks to what their motives were.
Yeah.
Like, you know, these people that had violent or criminal histories, were they out there because they were really on board with the Black Lives Matter protests, or were they out there to make trouble because that's something that they enjoy doing?
Yeah.
And I think that that's a reasonable question to ask.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So it does have some relevance as we talk about the results. But the question that matters in the case, and which is, I think, a good thing that none of this was allowed into the courtroom, the only thing that matters is who is the aggressor.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the only question that you're trying to answer here, is who is the aggressor? Now, there's some weird stuff that's come up, too. Like, why did he shoot the guy four times instead of just once and so forth? And that, like, there's no...
Well, in the heat of the moment, you can't, like...
Yeah, you don't know. Yeah. You, in a self-defense, you are allowed to fire until the threat is neutralized.
Yeah.
And that's in your own head when the threat is neutralized.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So, I mean, and it's hard to... Like, you don't... If it were me, and I would think that if it were any of you out there in the audience either, if somebody is attacking you and you have a gun, you're not going to fire once and see if that stops him or not.
Yeah, right.
Oh, well, let's give him a second to see if he's had enough. No, no, you just, you keep pulling the trigger. And if you don't think that way, then you should start thinking that way, honestly. Like if, you know, if I were... Okay, so I remember reading, I can't remember the guy's name now, but, you know, my dad, who taught firearms, told us the same thing.
Yeah.
He's like, you keep pulling the trigger until he stops.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like, stops. But I remember reading some other guy that taught self-defense courses, firearm self-defense courses, or home defense, or whatever. I can't remember exactly what the titles were, but anyway. It was
defense, yeah.
Yeah. He said... He said, this all kind of came out together, so I'll share it all. He's like, don't ever say, I have a gun.
Yeah.
Let that first sound that the person invading your home hears is the safety clicking off.
Yeah.
Now, I think that you shouldn't even have the safety on personally, but that, you know, I live in a house with no children, so that, you know, that's a little easier.
Yeah.
And he said, and once you decide that it's time to pull the trigger, you keep pulling the trigger until there's nothing happening when you pull the trigger. Yeah. He meant fire until you're out of rounds.
Yeah.
He said, if you're going to be advanced on by the intruder, they need to advance through a hail of gunfire.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I wholeheartedly agree.
And I recommend the same thing. Like when you start pulling the trigger, when you've decided it's time that you need to pull the trigger, you keep pulling the trigger.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Until it is definitely done.
Yeah.
I had a dream about this one time. Did I tell you?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. So I dream very vividly, and I dream just about every night.
Yeah.
I had a dream that somebody was trying to break into this house, which is actually also kind of unusual because, you know, home is a weird thing in dreams. Like home most of the time in my dreams is some semblance of the house that I grew up in, not the house that I live in now.
Yeah.
But anyway, I had a dream one night in this house, that somebody was trying to break in through my bedroom window.
Yeah.
And I got my pistol, and I came back out and I pointed the gun at the person and they backed away.
Yeah.
So I let the gun down. And then he started trying to come in through the window again. So then I started firing.
Yeah.
And it was like bang, 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 bang. And I kept shooting until the person stopped moving.
Yeah.
In the dream.
In the dream, yeah.
This hasn't happened in real life. But honestly, like I woke up feeling pretty good about that.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, well,
my instincts tell me.
Yeah. I didn't hesitate and and as long as, and I kept pulling the trigger until I was sure that there was no threat anymore.
Yeah.
So he's perfectly within his rights to do that.
Yeah.
It's still self-defense as long as he's not the aggressor.
Yeah.
And, they tried to make a case that he had, instigated it, even though he didn't, you know, take the first shot as it were.
Yeah.
Although he did actually take the first shot, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. The first movement. Yeah.
You know, and, they didn't make a very good case for it, which is why it fell flat.
Yeah.
And honestly, I'm not even sure. I've been debating this in my own head. Like, even if that takes away your right to self-defense.
Yeah.
Like, if you go and you're talking trash and you, like, get people pissed off at you and you're carrying a gun and they attack you.
Yeah.
Are you still not entitled to, like, even if you provoked them, provocation is the legal term that they're using, right?
Yeah.
Even if you provoked the attack,
it's
not like he had a hidden weapon. It was on his shoulder.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like right out there in front. Everybody knew he had a gun.
Well, I think the fact that it is not concealed would have an impact on how, in my mind at least. Now, legally, I have no clue. But in my mind, if you're out there talking a bunch of smack, if you got a big gun on your hip or in his case, like shouldered, you knew not to attack that guy.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like that would tell you. Now, it may be, I may feel a little differently about it if you have a concealed weapon mm-hmm. and you're like in a bar or something messing with folks.
Yeah.
And then you end up using that gun.
Yeah.
I might would feel a little differently about that.
Yeah. I thought the same thing. Like, yeah. So I don't know. The legal question is set aside. Yeah. I mean, mostly what we're coming back to here, is the libertarian,
angle.
Yeah, is the libertarian idea that you do not aggress against yeah. others.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
But the legal question is here, it is aligned with the libertarian position, which is yeah. that if you are not the aggressor, you are entitled to defend yourself.
Absolutely.
And I think that the defense proved that without a doubt, and the state certainly failed miserably to try to prove otherwise.
Yeah.
In this case, I think that they came to the right conclusion. He was definitely defending himself. There's other questions about whether he should have put himself in that position in the first place and so forth, but that's not really relevant.
No, and it shouldn't be, because yeah, I mean, people have a right to go and do, like, I mean, to say, well, he shouldn't have been there. Well, nobody else should have been there either.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean,
yeah, I guess so.
Like, at that point, why don't we just lock everybody in their homes? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, if that's going to be the stick, you know, I mean, you don't have a right to defend yourself if you left your house. Yeah. Like,
well, I mean, the scary part of this is if they had come to a different conclusion, because I do think that the state is working towards a state of things where you're not allowed to defend yourself, where yeah. the only thing that you can rely on is the state to defend you. And it seems very clear that you can't actually rely on the state to defend you.
Well, no, because in many cases, especially with law enforcement, they're not required to.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we've talked about that on the podcast
see
a few times.
Episode 13?
Yeah, we talked about that extensively. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
To Protect and Serve, I think was the title of the episode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, and that leads into the other case, I think, which is the Ahmaud Arbery case. And we talked about this when it came up. I think we talked. I definitely talked about it. It might have been. It was early in 2020, so it might have been when we were not
together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, definitely talked about this case when it first came up. And in this case, there had been some burglaries in an area of homes under construction. And these three guys chased down a man who was running after leaving one of these construction sites. And they stopped him to make a citizen's arrest. And the guy who they stopped went for one of them's gun. They tried to stop him with guns.
Yeah.
They like chased him down in a truck. And you know, one of them jumped out of the truck and they brandished their guns and tried to stop him. And he tried to take one of the guns away and he ended up getting shot.
Yeah.
So in the end here, the question is once again, like, who was the aggressor?
Yeah.
And I said at that time, that I thought that these guys should be tried for some level of murder.
Yeah.
I don't know that you could go for murder one, like, you know, preconceived, et cetera. But, certainly I thought that it was murder then.
Yeah.
And that it was perfectly reasonable for this guy to have gone for the weapon, because as far as he's concerned, he just got stopped by two guys with a gun and he's got to defend himself.
Well, he doesn't know what these guys' intention are, regardless of what they're telling him.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you're running down the street and somebody pulls a gun on you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't know where this is going. The next thing you know, you're locked in their basement, you know, having organs taken. Like, yeah. I mean, who the hell knows? Like,
yeah, so. Yeah. Fair enough. So, but this again has become a thing about race somehow, because the man who was shot was a black man. And the three men involved. Now, it's two men with guns and one man with a camera, essentially, yeah. With a cell phone camera. It's Greg and Travis McMichael. This is a father and son. And their neighbor, Roddy Bryan, was the guy with the cell phone.
Yeah.
Their claim is that they were trying to make a citizen's arrest and that they were defending themselves when he tried to take the gun away.
Yeah.
And they shot him in self-defense.
That just seems so flimsy to me.
And the jury agreed.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they came back quick, by the way, too.
Yeah. It's like 10 hours.
Yeah. If you look at the difference between that case and the Rittenhouse case, they took a lot longer with Rittenhouse.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the Rittenhouse case is actually
was way more clean cut.
At least as clear cut. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they came back and they said they convicted all these guys of murder.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the right verdict again.
I agree. And when I talk about how quick it, they had a lot more to decide on in this case. Because they had to make each of those, there was quite a few charges, and they had to make decisions based off, or for each person involved. Yeah. Because the guy that had the camera didn't have wasn't found guilty of quite as many charges as the other two.
Yeah.
But they're all three looking at serious jail time.
Yeah. Now this should be one of those situations where you're like, okay, well, the justice system works, right?
Yeah.
Like, they came to the correct conclusion in both of these cases. Yeah. But somehow, I read you those headlines from major newspapers, New York Times, LA Times, Politico, and the AP. I read you the opening paragraph of the AP.
Yeah.
And they present it in such a racially charged manner.
Yeah.
Three white men in southern Georgia hunt down a black man and blast him with a shotgun, and that's how they're presenting this.
Yeah.
And they're leaving out some important bits of information there.
Yeah.
Now, like I said, I think that they were in the wrong and that they should be convicted of murder.
Oh, absolutely.
As they were. But I guess this is what it comes down to. And this is one of those things. We are not so divided as they want us to be.
Well, it makes it to me when you read me off that, you get this picture in your head of a bunch of rednecks just like riding up on somebody and shooting them. And what they're trying to do is give you the impression that this type of thing happens all the time.
Yeah.
And that's not what the facts of the case are. Like, even the guys are absolutely guilty.
Mm-hmm.
They're not presenting it the way it occurred, you know, or giving you any kind of, like, I get that they can't give you every detail of what happened, but that's not like an accurate overview.
Yeah, no, they're presenting it in a particular way.
Yeah.
In order to create that impression.
Yeah.
And so this is the big thing, is that if you present everything as racially motivated, then you create racism where it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
That, like, this is a, race is a thing that has been generally irrelevant to me.
Yeah.
In my life. And it's becoming more and more relevant because it's become the important underlying factor of the way everything is presented politically.
Yeah.
It's having an impact on my life now in a way that it never did before.
Yeah.
And it's not because it's actually something that's relevant. It's because of the way the media and politics is making it into something more than it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would tell you that I think we were absolutely a less divided country before Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, that's really kind of when it felt like all of this started to really start.
Yeah. Well, and Trump made it so much worse. Presidency. Oh,
yeah, Trump. Yeah. I mean, I would agree with that. But but you really look before, 2008, 2009? Like, I'm thinking that's right.
Yeah.
I mean, it seemed like race after that became more and more of a focus, where it just wasn't before that.
Well, and it's not just race. It's everything. It is race, gender, sexual orientation, religion. Like, all of these things are becoming very important in all decision-making, or at least the presentation of everything by the media and by politicians. And I just go back to the same thing that I always go back to, which is that it is intended to divide us.
Oh, yeah.
Because all of us plebs down here at the bottom, we're far less of a threat to the elites at the top if we're fighting amongst ourselves instead of fighting with them.
Yeah. Well, I've heard an argument made before that this was a concentrated effort after the Occupy Wall Street movement, that a lot of these groups got together and realized that there could be problems here, and they needed to start dividing people up more.
Yeah.
Well,
they're doing it successfully.
I don't know if there's anything to that. I'm just saying the timeline seems to match up as far as when all of this kind of started versus, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's unfortunate because there's no reason for it. There's no reason for it. Yeah. But on the left, or in the media, or, you know, wherever you happen to be, if you present everything in terms of race, you can't be upset when race becomes something that people talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
And so it's something that I could have very easily ignored through most of my life.
Yeah.
And now I can't.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's forced upon you.
Yeah. I have to present, I have to argue against this kind of crap that comes out in the news media.
Yeah.
Neither of these cases are about race. No. They have nothing to do with race. They are both a question of who was defending themselves. Who is the aggressor?
Yeah.
And in both cases, the person, it came out on the side of the person that it should have.
Yeah.
And in one case, that's a white guy, and in one case, that's a black guy. And now you can also make the point that for the black guy, it's not quite as good because he's already dead.
Yeah. Well, I do think you can make an argument in the Arbery case that the reason they came after him was because he was a black guy.
Probably.
I would concede that wholeheartedly, just because, I mean, I guarantee you if it had been a white guy running up the road, those guys wouldn't have went after him. But it doesn't really matter, because the fact of the matter is that that's what happened.
Yeah.
And they got what they deserved because of what they did.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
and on the other side, you could make the case that the protests and riots could have been about anything other than Black Lives Matter, and Kyle Rittenhouse would have still been out there defending property.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with that. Absolutely. So there you go. You know?
Yeah.
So it's all a mess, man.
I don't know. That's all I really have about the two cases. I've gotten really frustrated with the focus on race, because it just doesn't hold the kind of relevance
And it goes back to, I'm pretty sure I've said this on the podcast before. I mean, we don't live in a racist country. Race relations are, well, I would say pre-Obama were better than they've ever been in this country. Mm-hmm. And they've only gotten worse since then. And we know who to blame. It's not like it's a question, well, who do we look to and who's caused this problem? We know who caused this problem. It's the media.
Yeah.
The media has created this for whatever reason. Like, I don't know why.
Well, because conflict drives clicks.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, maybe it drives up with when social media really started getting big.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that's a factor in this somehow, too. I don't know.
Yeah.
But something, the media is to blame, and that's who we need to be looking at. Because at the end of the day, like I say, there's very rarely do you encounter anybody that's like truly a racist.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not out. And I live in the South. Like,
yeah.
I mean, and I'm not going to say it never happens. Like, I mean, yeah, I've heard people make, you know, remarks I don't agree with, you know, or something. I mean, it's out there, but they're not like running around hunting people, you know, they just have weird beliefs, you know,
and it's on all sides. I've heard, I've heard, you know, comments that I disagree with from people just about every race, certainly that I can think of.
Yeah.
But
at the end of the day, we don't live in a country where racism is a real problem.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you're not getting jobs because like that type of thing's just not happening.
Yeah. And I think that it's particularly bad for black people because it breeds this kind of victim mentality and this kind of fatalism that nothing you do will matter because, you know, the white man's holding
always
you down.
Against you.
And I think that that's a terrible way to view your world.
Yeah.
Because it saps motivation. And there have certainly been situations in my life where it seemed to me that there was some factor about me particularly that made it so that it was going to be harder for me to get to where I wanted to go within this organization or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, the best thing that you can do there is just take it as a challenge. Like, if I have to be twice as good as everybody else to progress at the same level,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I can be twice as good as everybody else.
Yeah. Well, and it's all on how you handle that, you know, because I mean, successful people are going to be successful and some people just are not going to be successful. it's horrible to say that, but it is.
Well, there
the
is a mindset
is
that impacts
truth.
This. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's there, you know?
But I think that by, raising people to believe that the system is working against them, you you kind of instill or put them on a pathway to that mindset of failure.
Well, I would I would argue that there is a system that's not just it's working against everybody.
Well, yeah.
It's called the government. Like that's the root that focus that energy in the right places, people.
No, absolutely. Like this system that's working against poor people, it's not rich people, it's the government. You know, it's the government that allows this kind of runaway inflation by inflating the money supply. By inflating credit, by reducing interest rates. The people that get to take advantage of that are the people at the top.
Yeah, exactly.
And it doesn't matter what race they are. And the people at the bottom suffer. And it doesn't matter what race they are.
Exactly.
And so I guess shifting gears a little bit, the Durham investigation into the origins of the Russiagate. Scandal.
I remember Russiagate.
Because it won't go away. It won't go away. And I don't understand how anybody, honestly, at this point, can still be behind this that's paying any attention at all. Because at every step, this thing has been debunked and fallen apart. And it's...
It goes back to the same thing we talked about in the Rittenhouse case. It goes back to a media that is misinforming the public.
Yeah.
Like,
well, that's part of it. There's also a partisan part of it.
There is a
there is the the old Trump derangement syndrome as well. But in the end, it seems clear that, I mean, like we started off with the Carter Page thing. Remember, like Carter Page, and this, I don't know if these two aspects of the Russiagate thing are, were colluding or not, like whether the intelligence or law enforcement side of it was colluding with this this media side of it that the Steele stuff represents. But, you know, you had Carter Page and George Papadopoulos. Now, Carter Page is the best example because they, the FBI used him and his contacts with Russians to get the FISA warrant.
Yeah.
That they used to spy on the Trump campaign because they got the two hop rule. And just bear, like, forget that it's Trump. Actually, I wonder if I can get through this without saying Trump again. Okay. So Carter Page worked for a presidential campaign, the Republican nominee for president. And he had contacts with Russians, which the CIA was aware of because when he was approached by the Russians, he contacted the CIA and he was working as an asset of the CIA in his contacts with the Russians. The FBI uncovered these contacts with the Russians when they were seeking, well, maybe this is alleged, I guess, when they were possibly seeking a way to attack the Republican nominee for president. Under the previous Democrat administration. Okay. So they contact, because one of the first things that you do when you have somebody of interest is that you contact other, other agencies and say, do you know about this guy, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the CIA replied, he's working for us. Okay. The FBI just hid that piece of information when they presented the first FISA request. All right. So they already knew that Carter Page was not actually somebody who might be working with the Russians. He was working with the CIA against the Russians. And the FBI just ignored that when they knowingly ignored that when they presented their request for FISA to get permission from the FISA court, which is already a problem because it's a secret court, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know,
not like we support the FISA courts.
To get this ability to surveil him. And so they already knew that they were lying to the FISA court when they requested the warrant. All right. So we know about that. That's already been uncovered. And that is one of the big things, the big reasons that the FBI was investigating the Republican nominee for president's campaign in the first place.
All right.
Well, now Durham has had been placed in charge of finding. Oh, of course. Then you have what's his name, Mueller, the Mueller investigation that turned up nothing. Nothing at all. He presented 1,000 pages of nothing. And then Durham was placed to seek to do an investigation into the origins of the whole conspiracy.
Yeah.
All right. So they already, and I can't even think of the first guy's name. They already arrested somebody about it. There's already been one indictment about it, but this is the most recent one, is Victor Danchenko. Now, Victor Danchenko is the primary source for what became known as the Steele dossier, which was all these allegations against the Republican nominee for president, that he was connected with the Russians. It included the whole the P-tape scandal and like all of that stuff, right? Yeah. A bunch of really salacious things that could be used as compromising material by the Russians, supposedly to blackmail the Republican nominee for president.
Yeah.
Now, Victor Danchenko was arrested now for lying to the FBI about this information, and he was lying to Christopher Steele. Danchenko was also fed lies. The stuff that he didn't make up himself, essentially, was fed to him by a man named Charles Dolan, who is an old Clintonite. He was on the, I think he was on Bill's original campaign for presidency, this guy, Charles Dolan.
Yeah.
And at the time that all of this was going on, the Steele dossier stuff, he was working for a PR firm that was registered as a foreign agent for Russia.
Huh.
All right?
Yeah.
So, and then you back up even farther and you find that Steele was hired by Fusion GPS, who was paid, and Fusion GPS was paid by the Democrat Party, and the Clinton campaign through the Clinton's law firm.
Really?
Yes. And then this other stuff that was going on was this information loop thing. Now Steele was an old MI6 guy.
Yeah.
And he knows how to play the game, right? So he was leaking information from the Steele dossier to news media. And when it was printed, he was presenting himself as a confirming source.
Oh, yeah.
Even though he was the original source.
Yeah, right.
So he's leaking the information and then when and presenting himself as somebody that knows about this stuff, too, so that he'd be contacted by the media and asked to confirm the information that they had been leaked.
He
was the person that leaked it in the first place.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So what this does present, though, in the end, is that it seems and there's even more connections, like Steele was introduced to Danchenko by Fiona Hill. She was a big part of the Ukraine gate stuff. Also Clintonite, as far as I know.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm getting to is in the end, it seems like the only conspiracy, the only collusion with the Russians was from the Clinton campaign against the Republican nominee for president.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least as regards the Steele dossier. As for the FBI stuff, a case could be made that it was the standing Democrat president that was part of the conspiracy.
Wow.
Against the Republican nominee, the opposition nominee.
Yeah.
And this is some crazy stuff that people should be really scared about.
Yeah.
And I like so I've got, you know, I know a guy who is listening to this and going, oh, you Trumper, blah, 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 Russiagate conspiracy, et cetera, et cetera. I heard it myself. He stood there in front of the cameras and asked Russia to get those emails.
Yeah.
You remember exactly what he said?
I just told you earlier. Now I'm trying to think back.
I was trying to set you up.
Yeah. Oh, crap. It's gone.
Yeah. Well, he said that if they could find those emails, that there would be plenty of people that would pay lots
that
of
would
money.
Pay
for
lots
them.
Of money for them. That's right. Right. Yeah.
Now, I think that it's pretty clear that the whole thing was a joke. But even if it's not a joke, like, it's not collusion to call that out in that way.
Yeah.
And the important thing, I think, to remember is that why would you not be interested in the behavior of the previous Secretary of State that could be the next president?
Well,
like,
yeah.
If there's anything that is illegal or unethical or whatever in that information, who cares what the source is? If the emails are real, like the Democratic Party stuff that was leaked through WikiLeaks, right? what the media did immediately was focus on that these emails were stolen, that these emails were stolen. Yeah, well, but the important part is what's in the emails, don't you think? Like, that's the...
Absolutely. Like, yeah.
You know, you're not saying that the emails aren't real. You're just saying that the emails are stolen. Yeah. And it presents some really bad stuff that the Democrat Party was involved in. Yeah. And so it doesn't matter what the source is, really, does it? What matters is what the material is.
What matters is the content.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this whole thing just continues to break down, and but I think that the important part to be concerned about is that it does seem possible, at least, and maybe even likely, that whoever is in power has the capabilities of using the intelligence apparatus and the media to attack the opposition.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just some third world stuff that we don't want going on here.
No, I wholeheartedly agree.
This is how you end up with a one-party system of communists.
Yeah. Well, it just makes it all that much more of a fight, like, when you go for election time. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, it's just because you don't know what to believe because you don't know. You can't trust the intelligence agencies.
And you can't trust the media.
Yeah, and you definitely can't trust the media. Yeah. So,
so you have to come to sources like ours.
Yeah, that dig down and find all this junk out.
Yeah, we're the trustworthy source.
Yeah. There's not a whole lot of them out there anymore.
Yeah, it does seem. Actually, there's more and more.
Well, there's
they're
well,
just
they're
small.
They're just I was fixing to say they're all independent, small like us.
Yeah,
yeah. But that other than that, like you definitely can't trust the big ones. Like,
yeah,
there's just and it's a shame. Like we should have a good media would keep all of this type of thing in check. Mm-hmm. But we don't have that anymore. In any way.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I've said over and over again that I don't think that the person who's sitting in the Oval Office really matters anymore. Yeah. I think this country is run by a bunch of entrenched bureaucrats and that they use the apparatus of the state. And I think that this is a clear example that they use the apparatus of the state to achieve the victory for the person that's most in line with their agenda.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and another part of that we talked about recently is that it's becoming more and more apparent that if you are opposed to the current administration's agenda, that you are now being labeled as a domestic terrorist or an enemy of the state.
Yeah.
And like, go back and watch that movie.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. These are dangerous pathways that we're taking here.
Yeah.
And we, the people, need to take back our country.
Well, I mean, history's littered with instances where this type of thing ends badly.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's there, man. Like,
and this is why you need an anarchist society.
Yeah, I agree. Like,
the state is always a danger, no matter how big it is, because it is in the nature of the state to grow.
Yeah. And we've seen ours get as big as you can ask for.
Yeah, as Dave Smith says, right? Like, yeah. It was created to be the smallest government in history, and it's become the largest.
Yep, yep. Here we are.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I guess that's it. Do you have anything else that you wanted to... Oh, there was
nothing,
something else.
Yeah, right? Nothing big, but I just wanted to kind of throw this out. I hadn't got to look into it much, but it keeps popping up in my news feed today, or on my phone today. So, there's a new variant popped up in Africa, COVID variant.
Okay.
And supposedly it's...
Is it the Omega variant?
I don't know if they've named it. Maybe they have. Like I said, I hadn't done as much looking, but I think that Biden's already shut down travel from Africa. And
that guy is such a racist.
Well, you know when it popped up because I literally got a headline that popped up on my my news alert, and that's what it said was Biden was shutting down travel coming from Africa, and I was like, dude, if Trump had done that, you imagine?
No,
like
no, I really can't.
I just, but anyway,
we'd be impeaching him tomorrow. I'm sure.
Oh, exactly. Mm. But this variant supposedly is supposed to be resistant to the spike proteins that are produced by the vaccine, or the vaccine has you produce, or
yeah, okay. So the vaccine has you produce spike proteins with the idea that your body will attack them and be, I don't know, attuned essentially to fight off these spike proteins. So, yeah. I mean, the only way, are they saying then, well, you don't know.
I don't really know. But, like I said, it's just what I've caught from headlines today.
Like, that would suggest that this is a COVID variant that doesn't use spike proteins? But that's like the defining feature of coronavirus.
Like I said, we need to dig in a little more and see. But apparently, that's like the fear. And really, the only thing I want to say about it is because we've been pretty hard on the vaccine on this podcast with good reason.
Yeah.
But like when these headlines started popping up today, it really did kind of scare me because I don't want to go back to 2020 again. And say what you will about the vaccine, but it's brought us out of that environment, at least somewhat, like not completely, but we're living in a better society today than we were a year ago.
Well, it depends on where you are. Europe is locking down all over the place.
Yeah.
And has been.
And yeah.
With 80%+ vaccinations rates. So I don't think that we ever really escaped. There might have been a psychological relaxation because the vaccines were out there.
Yeah.
But, you know, we can't have that.
Yeah,
we gotta keep people in fear.
And that's the other thing that worries me is like I think we're immune from it where we're at down here. Like I think that the South is pretty well decided we're gonna go on living our lives.
Yeah.
But I tell you, man, this is not going away.
Yeah. Well, they haven't quite gotten everything that they want out of it, I suppose. But it's been more effective than anything that they've ever tried.
It is. Well, that's just it. Like, where is this leading?
Far more effective than the terror war.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, as far as getting what they've wanted.
Yeah,
as
far centralizing as
control,
power.
Yeah, as far as control is concerned, there's no question.
Yeah.
And I don't think you get here without the terror war, though. Like, yeah. I think that the terror war led us to where we're at now, you know? I don't think people would have put up with this if it had just all came at once like this.
Actually, you know what? Ronald Reagan said something about, gosh, I wish I could remember the quote, where he said worst thing that could happen in terms of pushing towards a more authoritarian power in the U.S. was a medical emergency.
Really?
Yeah. That the fear of a medical emergency could be used to push us more towards authoritarianism than anything else that he could conceive.
Yeah. Well, it definitely makes sense. I mean, we're watching it unfold in front of us right now.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, you just got to stand up. I mean, there's nothing to do but to resist this. Yeah. And I
by
wish
the way,
that
that's
we...
coming on a shirt soon. I'm just going to put resist right across the chest.
Yeah, that's already been co-opted by somebody.
Oh,
has it? Remember, it was resist Trump.
Oh, no, I can't wear that.
No, you can keep wearing it. Then people will say, yeah, man.
Right? Oh, no, do not comply.
Yeah.
That's what I'm getting. That's the shirt I'm getting. I think I've seen it out there already. But
I still, every time I go through the airport and I have to go through that stupid machine, when I'm standing there next to the security guy and I got to put my arms over my head in that machine, I still, every time I say, this is not the pose of a free
this
man.
This is not the pose of a free man. Yeah. I'm telling you.
I want to make sure that they hear me say that every single time.
Yep.
Like, go home and think about that one, buddy. But yep. He probably doesn't care because he's feeling the power.
He's the control guy. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Well, I bet he's got to walk through one of those things when he flies down too.
Probably. Yeah. You don't think they got a little special card?
Maybe. I don't know. My dad used to.
Did he?
Yeah. Except he said it was more trouble than it was worth. He had to do all this paperwork to get through airports.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, well. All right. Well, I guess that's it. We got in a second episode this week, so we're like back on schedule, sort of. So maybe next Thursday, right? Like that, is that the plan? We're done with...
Softball's done. I'm trying to think. It seems like there's something. What's next week? I can't think of anything. We'll record next week one way or the other. It may not be Thursday, though.
Okay, well, we'll figure that out.
We're going to record next week, though.
All right, well, just stick around. Keep your eyes on the little screen. We'll pop up eventually.
Yes.
while you're waiting, follow us on Facebook. Subscribe on iTunes, Podbean, YouTube. Like and share, tell your friends. Is that all the stuff?
I think that's all the stuff, man.
All right. Well, we'll be back in roughly a week when we finally get this right. And in the meantime, try to stay free.
Life's short. Live free.
Ciao.
Later.